All right, let's talk money. Money is a necessity in business, but it can also be a pain point, particularly for product-based business owners, because our investments, our overhead, and the risks are just generally heightened compared to service-based businesses. And we not only need to make money, but we also need to spend money for future expansion and growth. But where does that money come from? How are people doing this? I get this question a lot when we talk with our students. So many brands in our industry are self-funded, meaning that they use their own money for startup costs, and then they reinvested those revenues or profits back into the business. Another option for this is grants. We talked with Ashley Sutton of Hustle and Hope in episode 374, Proof to Product, about how she has utilized grants to grow her business. And grants are funding that we do not need to pay back. Today, we're going to talk about leveraging debt and funding as a means to expand your business. Now, while I do not want to glorify going into debt for your business, I do believe and I know firsthand that there are responsible ways to leverage debt and essentially use other people's money for strategic growth within your business. And that's why I asked Ziba Parker from Trayleaf to come back on the podcast today. Ziba was on the podcast for episode 320, where we talked about the challenges she was facing of bringing a new product to life. She does these incredible laser-cut trellises and modern plant accessories that she manufactures in-house in her studio and warehouse, and she has a whole team and a lot of equipment. Since then, she has expanded her business even more, and some of that has been done through funding from outside sources. So on this episode today, Ziba and I catch up on what's been happening in her business since late 2023, since we last talked on the podcast, including how she did 13 trade shows in 2024. We talk about her approach to finding funding for her business, different loan options that she looked at, including Shopify Capital, lines of credit options. We talked about hurdles that she came up against when she started applying for this type of funding, and Ziba shares things that she wished she had known before she started applying for different types of funding. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I do want to remind you that we have an incredible free resource library with resources that were built specifically for product-based business owners. I'm talking free workshops, guidebooks, downloads, all sorts of things to help you with your sales and marketing for your product-based business. So you can gain access at prooftoproduct.com/resources. Hands down, the most popular free workshop in that resource center is my Is Wholesale Right For You workshop. It's a 25-minute video. I'll run you through 8 questions that every product creator needs to ask themselves before they start thinking about selling wholesale. And I'll also provide a lot of strategies and tactics to keep the process simple. So again, this is like concrete, actionable plans to help you get started with wholesale. You can get instant access to our rich resource library by going to prooftoproduct.com/resources. That's prooftoproduct.com/resources. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of 4. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Ziba, welcome to Proof to Product.
Hi, Katie. Thank you so much for having me again.
I should say welcome back. You've already been here. You were on episode 320, and this was back in November 2023, where we talked about a real range of topics at the time. We talked about the challenges of bringing a new product to life and how you were also legally protecting your brand and your products. So I would love to hear what's new since then. It's been a wild ride over the last year for you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I feel like 2024 was a big growth spurt for Trayleaf. And with growth spurts, you always have challenges. But I feel like 2024, we basically doubled down on wholesale. And that meant in 2023, we did a few trade shows and they were working very well. So we were like, okay, we are going to do every show we can find.
I was going to say, tell the listeners how many trade shows you exhibited at last year.
We did 13 trade shows in 2024. which sounds crazy, but I mean, it was not planned. It was like, we got invited to another one, and we were like, okay, we'll do this one and then do this one. Some of them were like not full blown trade shows. Like some of them were more like networking kind of things where you just bring like a small table with stuff. So, I mean, we did a gamut of different ones, did things that were more gift related, a lot of them in the planned lawn and garden area. And then, yeah. I mean, I feel like I said this in 2023, we started working with one distributor, and these distributors also have their own shows. So we did a few distributor shows too. So like it was kind of all over the place, but really hectic.
I want to pull back on that, and I want to call you on that. It was not all over the place. It was very strategic. It may not have felt like pre-planned. You didn't go into 2024 thinking we're going to do 13 trade shows this year. But also at the same time, you were seizing opportunities as they came up. And you were, I mean, you and I talked about this when we were talking about having you join the advisory board. And like, you made so many intentional decisions based on, here's my goal for the business. I want to grow wholesale. I want to grow these types of relationships. And so when those opportunities came about, you said yes to them. And so, I don't know, I just want to push back on you a little bit here and say, it wasn't haphazard. It wasn't random. You worked hard for these opportunities, and then you took advantage of the ones you could. So kudos to you on that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, when you put it like that way, yes, we definitely were kind of like, we want to grow, and whatever we need to grow, we were ready to do it. So
yeah. Also, I just want to let the listeners in on this. Like the 13 shows you did, as you mentioned, there was a lot of variety to that. But we are seeing, I want to share a little tidbit from my general viewpoint as somebody that works with a lot of folks doing shows. People are seeing a lot of growth with the regional and the specialty trade shows right now. And I know you've seen a lot of growth with those. You talked about the tropical plant shows, some of your distributor shows. So I would love to hear more about how you're leaning into some of those instead of larger traditional gift shows.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like for us, what we have seen with more generic shows, there's a lot of foot traffic, of course, but not everybody walking by is our customer. Versus if we go to a tropical plant show, for example, which we were there last month, literally every person, even though like the number of people are less, but you get 1,000 people that are walking by, and each and every person is your customer. So we definitely, the ROI on those shows is much higher than, say, Atlanta show, which we also do. And we are, I mean, I guess for next year, we are going to like have a more look at these numbers very, very carefully and decide which ones we are going to do and which ones we are not going to do. But I feel like unless you do at least one or two of these shows, you don't get a feel for how it's going to work for your brand. So I feel like after doing so many, I kind of have a very good idea of which kind of shows work for us and which kind of shows don't work for us.
Yeah, for sure. And to your point, I just want to reiterate what you said. What works for one brand may not work for another. And so really doing your homework, studying up on it, going and visiting a show before you exhibit or taking the leap to exhibit to see if it's the right fit is kind of, you got to do your homework to decide too.
Yeah. And I mean, I think another thing that I would like to share is what I have found is also talking to other vendors and asking them, like, I mean, if they are adjacent vendor or, you know, somebody who has the similar customer base as you do, asking them what shows do they do and which ones work well for them. And people are very generous with that information. I mean, that's what I have found. Earlier, I was like, should I ask this question to them kind of thing? But once I started asking them, like, I share my experience, the other people share their experiences, and we learn from each other. So I feel like even just that has helped us to like figure out, okay, oh, there's another show here that we did not even think about kind of thing. So, yeah.
Well, that was your 2024. Every time I chatted with you, you're like, oh, I heard about this one. We're going to look into it. And then off you went. That's incredible. And yes, absolutely. Talking to past vendors and talking to friends in the industry who sell similar types of products is a great way to kind of get a sense of what's working and what's not. Although, as an example, we just had a bunch of people exhibit in Atlanta and New York. You were in Atlanta, right, too?
Yeah. I was in Atlanta.
And I felt like the feedback this winter was quite diverse. There were some people that were killing it, had a great show. They tended to be the more seasoned folks who had been there year over year. So, of course, that also helps because you know more people. But then I heard some people that didn't have such a great show. So you also have to be careful in who you talk to and find out maybe why, like what were some of the reasons? Because there's a lot of different reasons a show may not be as successful for somebody. It could boil down to simply location of your booth or, you know, how much marketing you did beforehand too. So there's a lot of factors to consider there. So,
right. Yeah, for sure. And I guess one other thing that we basically, other than trade shows, we also did quite a bit of work on our product line. So like, I mean, trying to consolidate, we kind of had, I mean, we still keep the same product line that we have. So we are mostly plant supports, but we started diversifying a little bit. So now we are getting more into like plant accessories. So we just launched our first plant saucers. So like drip trays that you put on under plants, and they are surprisingly doing very well. We actually won the Cool Product of 2025 award at the Tropical Plant Show too. So that has also brought a lot of visibility to it. So yeah, I mean, just trying to like diversify our product line a little bit. We also launched our display, like, because we kind of have a different, it's a new product line. People don't have anything similar in their stores right now. So people were struggling figuring out like, where do they place our stuff? And one of the things that we did last year was spend quite a bit of money and time trying to design a floor display. So it's like a small footprint that we can just sell the whole display to a store. And that seems to have opened up a lot of doors for us, because some of the stores that wanted to buy but we're not moving ahead were because of, you know, not being comfortable with merchandising our product. And I feel like now that we are helping them merchandise our products, that has helped them also.
That makes a lot of sense. When you bring a new product to market, there's a challenge of explaining what it is, but then also, as you mentioned, the merchandising of it, the displaying of it. If it's not something that they already carry, you know, somebody that sells greeting cards, for example, has a card wall, and you just, your cards get added to that wall. But plant accessories and all of what you're doing, it needs to tell a story that explains to the customer what it is, and it needs to fit into their existing product mix. And so I love that you spent a lot of time talking to customers, finding out what their needs were, testing different packaging and display options. I think I saw your deck recently when we did your audit and advisory board, and it was just beautiful. Like, the way you're presenting everything is so cohesive and it looks so great individually, each SKU, or collectively. And so you've done a really great job with them.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Of course. Okay. One topic I would love to dive further into with you is funding. I know that capital is a huge, I don't want to say it's a problem. Capital is something every business needs. Money is something every business needs to continue to grow. Everyone has different feelings about money. Some people are afraid of finding debt, funding, you know, getting loans and things like that. Some people are looking for grants. Some people are looking for investors to come into their business. But the fact of the matter is, everyone needs money to operate. And yet, at the same time, I find that people are sometimes uncomfortable talking about it, which is why I was kind of tripping over my words at the beginning of this, because I basically would love to hear how you have approached the concept of capital in your business and finding funding for these projects that you've wanted to do. Because doing 13 trade shows, working on displays and things, these things are not inexpensive.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, I think one of the things that the mindset change that you have to like have as a business owner is, to make money, you have to spend money. And you have to decide at what rate you want to grow, right? So there are various ways of growing. So the first 2 years, for example, I was in the mindset of bootstrapping. So that meant that, you know, I had put in some money from my savings, and I used that money to set up, like buy some machinery, set up the initial manufacturing of our facility. And then after that, I was using the cash flow to fund the business. And it was kind of hard to manage that, because it's like, you know, you sell some, you get paid, then you put that money into something else. And it's like, you can't take big swings when you're bootstrapping. And that's what was, I was able to grow a little bit the first 2 years using that. And that was, I mean, I felt like that was a good time for bootstrapping, because I was still figuring out my product mix and, you know, just like testing the market and all of that. But once I was like, okay, we have product market fit, we have customers, and this is the time that I think I need to grow, that's when we started doing trade shows. And as you know, trade shows are really expensive. Like, depending on which show you do and where you are and all of that, it can range from like a few $1,000s to like $10,000, $12,000, depending on how big the booth is and all the travel and if you're hiring people to come with you and all of that, right? So yeah, once we started doing trade shows, we knew, and with trade shows, the other thing is you don't get paid right away. Like, if you are selling something online, you make the sale, the money is in your bank next day, right? With trade shows, even if you're spending that much money, you probably are not going to get paid for that. Like sometimes it takes months for things to convert. Like you get some leads, you will convert those leads. Sometimes you have to go to the same show twice for people to like actually buy from you. So yeah. I guess I knew like if we had to do that many trade shows, we needed more money to run those. And initially, when I mean, I was looking for capital, I looked at a lot of options, like you said. I looked at grants, and there were not a lot of grants that I could find that I would fit in. And there were some that, I mean, I applied for a few, but it felt like I need to spend a lot of time writing these grants and customizing them, which I did not have, honestly. So that felt like, I mean, I was doing things that were not like converting. And then I looked at getting an investor, and I did spoke to some other business owners that have done that. And one of the things that I learned from them was raising money itself is a full-time job. So yeah. The advice I got was you'll have to take a break from the day-to-day for a couple of months to actually raise money. And I'm like, that's at the position the business was at that point. I was kind of like, I'm still very much entrenched in the day-to-day of the business. So I cannot take myself out for a couple of months to raise money at this point. So then the other option was loans. And that's where, I mean, I was kind of scared about taking debt, but I looked at my options. The first option that was told to me was, you know, an SBA loan. And I looked at that, but that also looked very daunting in the sense that there's a lot of paperwork involved to get a sizable loan that you need.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I basically shelved that idea too, and then went the route of looking at line of credits. I mean, instead of looking at it as like, okay, I need to get $100,000 or $200,000, I was like, okay, maybe I can get smaller chunks of money from different people and then piece it together. And that's kind of where the last year has been mostly using line of credits from wherever I can find.
Yeah. So just to clarify, you were seeking smaller sums of money from lines of credit from different banks for the business. Is that right?
Yeah. So I looked at number of options. So like once you have cash flow, for example, there are a number of places that can give you funding. The first place is, you know, your bank, of course. So the place that I bank with Wells Fargo. So I went to them and asked for what their rates are and what funding am I eligible for. And most of these line of credit funding versus the other SBA loans where you have to like give them a whole business plan, these line of credit, you can get funding within, you know, 24 hours. All you need to submit is your like bank statements from the last 3 months. So they are just seeing your, you know, what is in, what is out, like how much cash flow do you have? And from there you can do. So I started with my own bank. The rates I was getting at the bank, I mean, just to give you some numbers, like in terms of like interest rates, it can range from anywhere from like 5% to like 20%, you know. Of course, there's credit card debt also, which I've used a little bit of that too. And that can be extremely high. But basically, you know, you have to do your homework in terms of trying to get quotes from a number of vendors and trying to find. So I started with my bank, but then I used Shopify for both my wholesale and my retail side of the business. And Shopify also, you know, they have a banking segment where that gives loans, or, you know, they call them growth loans, where you don't have much control over them. So they just tell you, they give you an offer in your, you know, Shopify dashboard. So depending on how much monthly revenue you're generating, they have a formula for that. And they'll be like, okay, you can take this much amount and this is your rate. So this is, for example, they'll be like, okay, we are offering you $30,000. And the way they are structured, I like that over, you know, the banks, because what they do is when they give you $30,000, they'll be like, okay, we are going to add an interest of 6%. And this is going to be your total amount that you have to repay. And then from that, what happens is from every payout that they have, so like, for example, every day you're getting paid from Shopify, you don't have to remember to like pay them. They will take a percentage of that payout and move it towards your loan. So the payment varies. And if you are making money, they get paid a little bit more. So during Q4, for example, we had a really good Q4, and that meant I was able to like automatically the loan amount went away, right? Because we made more money, Shopify was pulling money from there, and we were done with that loan kind of thing. So I really liked that over, you know, having to remember and like, did I pay my loan this month or that month kind of thing. So yeah.
Totally. Okay. I want to chime in here with some information for our listeners, just to reiterate some things that I've also experienced, that if you are looking for a line of credit, going with your bank that you bank with on a regular basis for your business, it can be expedited a lot more quickly than if you're going to an outside bank or an outside credit union. Very much what Zeba was saying is they already know your volume of sales. They know what money's coming in and out. They've seen that you're like a good customer. And so they're oftentimes very likely to offer you a line of credit. And with a line of credit, you can pull from that line of credit, meaning just like a credit card, you can pull money. Well, you don't pull money from a credit card. You put things onto a credit card. But a line of credit is basically a revolving credit line where you can pull money, you can pay it back and use it again later when you need it. So it's pretty flexible, which is great. I really appreciate that you talked about how Shopify has their loans. Stripe, PayPal, and some of the other payment processors also have these types of things where it's a flat rate for the interest. And then you know ahead of time before you say yes to this, like, okay, I'm taking the $30,000 loan plus the whatever percent or whatever dollar amount that ends up at. And like you mentioned, you can decide what percentage of each transaction they take to pay it back. So with PayPal, I did one of those maybe 10 years ago to help with cash flow for one of our live events. And it was really great because I knew going into it, like you said, I knew what I was having to pay back. And I knew that as sales came in, it would just be paid down. And I had the option with PayPal to, they could take a bigger chunk of my incoming funds and I would pay less in interest, or they could take a smaller percentage of my incoming funds and I would pay a little bit more interest because it would take longer for it to pay back.
Yeah, I think Shopify also does it the same way. So like if you pay 25% of your payout, like the interest rate was, I think like 6% or something like that, versus if you let them only take 10%, then your interest rate goes up by 10, you know, 10% or whatever. Yeah.
I think this is an option that a lot of people don't know about. And also there are options and flexibility within these loan types of things. So I think this is really helpful for folks to hear because I think a lot of people are afraid to take out loans. I think they're afraid to use debt to grow their business. I'd love for you to share, like, what are some of the hurdles that you came up against when you started applying for this type of funding?
I guess the first hurdle was like the amount of funding, you know, how much do I need kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like I already said, initially I was like, I need that much. And how will I get that much? So I feel like, you know, getting out of that mindset and being like, okay, I should just, you know, think this in like small chunks. And if I'm getting this much, take it. And the more you do this, the more easier it gets to like get lines of credit. I mean, it's almost building up your credit history. You're building up the credit history of your business. And the loans that you pay back on time has been helping us to get better rates, bigger amounts, that sort of things going forward. The other hurdle or other annoyance, I would say, is once I put myself out there and like I filled up a few forms online, I got a lot of like spam calls. I feel like it was hard to like get spammers away from genuine people. And sometimes, you know, these spammers would call and ask for all sorts of personal information wherein like, oh, how much revenue do you have? And I'm like, I don't have to tell you this.
Right. I don't want to tell a stranger on the phone this information.
Yeah, exactly. So once you're like, okay, you can start blocking these people once you know they're spammers or whatever. But that's kind of something that I did not anticipate. And I was like, okay, maybe I should have been a little bit more diligent about not putting my actual cell phone number in there. Maybe I should have used a Google Voice number, for example, you know, so that I at least can scan through and know who is calling and what. So
that's a tactic that they use in the home buying market too. If you've ever purchased a home and you have to go through the loan process, the minute you even, like, we were already committed to a specific company with our loan, but I was getting calls from everyone under the sun about, we have a better rate and this and that. And it was just, it was wild how that information was shared. Like, it seems a little unethical in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. Okay. Is there anything you wish you knew before you had started applying for funding to expand your business? Were you scared at the beginning? Did that go away? Like, did you feel relief? What do you wish you knew ahead of time?
I guess one of the things that I would say is I was, of course, scared going in because, you know, you're taking money and you have to pay it back. But that's one of the things that I would say is, you know, I would tell myself, don't be scared. It's fine. Like, you're just using the money to grow the business and you're going to pay it back, right? And then the other thing that I would tell myself was not to give your cell phone number.
Oh, yes, yes.
I mean, every day I still get like 10 calls from all these, like, that I've been marking them spam. So I'm just like, I should have known better.
Well, I wouldn't have known better. That's a good tip for everybody listening. There's concerns about leveraging things like debt to grow your business because they just don't want to be beholden to somebody else either, right? Like they want to be able to control the inflow and outflow. But it sounds to me like using debt to grow your business, using that money to be able to grow your business has really opened up a lot of doors and it hasn't really presented a problem. I think one of the fears is payback. Like, how do I pay this back if I borrow it, right? Because sometimes our e-commerce sales, our wholesale sales are unpredictable. So like, how do I know that the cash flow is going to be there to pay it back? I think that's one of the big fears I hear. But it seems to me that you've had a really good experience and many others I've talked to have had a really good experience of like leveraging that capital for more so that it became very easy to pay it back. Was that your experience? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I would say from my experience, using debt wisely has helped us grow at a rate that I would have not thought we could have grown, right? And yeah, being able to do all the things that we wanted to do. Otherwise, I would have been like, okay, we cannot do it in these two quarters and I have to postpone it for the next one. And yeah, one of the things I would say is like, don't be afraid of debt, leverage it. And I mean, if leveraged properly, it can help you grow at the rate that you want to grow, I suppose, right? So I mean, we wanted to grow faster and we needed that injection of funding and we were able to do that.
I think a big key here is, you know, be responsible with this type of stuff. Research the options, understand what you're committing to, make sure that you feel comfortable with that. Because a lot of this stuff too is, it will land on us personally if the business doesn't pay it back to some extent. So, I mean, again, read the terms and conditions. Every deal is different. But I think that proceeding responsibly with options for funding is a really good way. There's so many smaller brands in our community who are completely self-funded. And that's how I was at the beginning too. And it's possible to grow your business that way. There's a lot of people that have been very successful that way, but it can take more time. You know, if I had had more money at the beginning, I could have done my website faster. I could have expanded our product line faster. You know, you purchased equipment and you signed up for trade shows that allowed for you to meet more accounts, larger accounts too, who are purchasing in higher volume. So I guess what I want to get across with this episode is that like debt is an option for helping you fund and grow your business. I do want people to be responsible with it. I want them to proceed with caution and make sure they read all the fine details so that they don't get in over their head. But at the same time, I think it's good for them to hear stories like yours where you were nervous about this and you dipped your toe in and it worked really well. And so you've got larger lines of credit in different places and you've continued to use that to expand. And so thank you for sharing that story. I guess my last question to you is just kind of what general advice would you have for other business owners who are considering applying for a line of credit or some sort of funding for their business?
I would definitely say use debt as a lever to grow your business. And if you can leverage it correctly, it can help you a lot. And also just pay your bills on time and you'll be fine.
Yeah, for sure. Know your limits, like know what your strengths are. Some people have a tough time with that. Some people don't. And just know where your strengths lie. Okay, Ziba, this is really informative. Thank you for sharing about your experience. And just to reiterate something we talked about earlier, you know, funding through debt, like lines of credits or credit cards is just one option for growing your business. There are grants out there. There's a lot of people doing self-funding. There's lots of people looking for investors. But I know that money is top of mind for a lot of folks right now because there's just a lot of growth to be had and things that we need to pay for. And so thank you for coming to share your experience about how you've leveraged this debt to enhance what you're already doing. Can you tell folks where they can find you online? And if you have anything new and exciting coming up that you want to share with our listeners, please do that as well.
Thank you so much again for having me. And you can find Treleaf at all the social media channels. You can type TReLeaf and you should be able to find us. And this year, check out our newest product, which are the saucers, and you can buy for yourself at treleaf.shop.
Ziba, thank you so very much. It was such a joy to chat with you again here. And thank you for taking the time to share with us.
Thank you.
I really appreciate Ziba coming back to provide us with an update on how things are going at Treleaf and also just to talk candidly about how she's leveraged different types of funding options to expand her product development, also her production through the new equipment they purchased, and her sales and marketing visibility through doing the trade shows that she did last year. You know, money is a necessity in business. And yet at the same time, it sometimes feels taboo to talk about it, especially in a public forum like this. So I appreciate Ziba coming back to share her experiences and her knowledge so that you can learn from her lessons as well. All of Ziba's links are in the show notes. So please be sure to follow her journey on Trayleaf's social media and also go check out their website for some really cool home decor and plant accessories. Also, we are going to continue this conversation about grants, outside funding, even self-funded businesses inside of our labs community. So if you are a product-based business owner and you are looking to connect with other people who sell physical products, come join us inside of Labs. This membership is focused on sales, marketing, and operational systems and strategies, but most importantly, it's about connecting with other people who understand what you're working towards and people who want to see you succeed. They're going to help you get there, myself included. So learn more about our community at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Last thing, if you found today's episode enlightening and helpful, I would appreciate it if you could share it with a friend and leave us a 5-star rating and write a review. You can leave that review at ratethispodcast.com/PTP for Proof to Product. Again, that's ratethispodcast.com/PTP. All right, thanks so much for listening until the end. I'll be back soon with a new episode.